Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired in the Premier Networks on Sunday, February 21st, 2016. This is episode 1264. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website or cover page for your portfolio, your business, your online store. Enter the offer code TECHGUY and get 10% off at purchase. Squarespace, you should. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/TechGuy. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Right now, get free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/tech guy. I just ran over from Studio B where we were watching what was going on in Barcelona. Not a big news story unless you're a gadget hound. Samsung's event announcing their new phone. In fact, two new phones announced from Samsung, a new phone announced from LG also today. And we expect more throughout the week. It's a big event for mobile carriers. They call it Mobile World Congress. Just to fill you in, Samsung announced a successor to the Galaxy S6 and S6 Edge. Logically enough, the S7 and S7 Edge. They look nice, beautiful phones. In fact, I always thought the S6 Edge was one of the most beautiful phones available. Samsung really, it's interesting, has decided that the future, and they've been struggling a little bit, to be honest. Apple has really dominated the high-end phone space, and so Samsung's had a hard time. They're the number two high-end phone manufacturer, though, and they've decided to kind of pull an Apple and become kind of an ecosystem. In other words, they really want you to buy their phones, their watches, their VR headsets. And now their 360-degree camera, they announced a 360-degree camera as well. And, of course, if you're going to use the Samsung smartwatch, you got to have a Samsung phone. And if you're going to use the Samsung camera, you got to have a Samsung phone. So it's kind of a gamble, I think, from Samsung. They're shooting the moon, to use a term from the card game Hearts. And the thing about shooting the moon is the stakes are high. Victory is very valuable, but it's easy to lose everything. And if people don't buy into this idea that you need all Samsung, they're not going to sell the VR headset. They're not going to sell the camera. They're not going to sell the watch because you have to have the phone. And it all kind of goes together. Massive success or massive failure. I have to say I was very impressed. Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, showed up on the stage in Barcelona unexpectedly to show his support for the Samsung line, in particular for the 360-degree video and the virtual reality headsets. Of course, Facebook bought a company called Oculus to make a 360-degree kind of virtual reality headset. The Oculus comes out in a couple of months. And what he's saying is, well, we have ours, but Samsung has theirs. They're all the same. They all work together, and they're all going to work on Facebook. And what he's really saying, and this is, I'd be very curious what you think about this, is the future of using Facebook will be some sort of 360-degree virtual reality experience. He says as a kid, when he was in the classroom, drawing pictures, thinking about, you know, software, this is what he envisioned, is some sort of kind of social reality that we all joined into virtually, where while we're at home, you know, sitting in our couch wearing this headset, this visor, we would be in a virtual reality world with our friends and family. Interesting. What do you think of it? 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number. 888-827-5536. No, I don't know, and they did not announce a price or a timing for availability. But if I had to guess, I would guess the new Samsung phones will be available next month for pre-order. Oh, by the way, if you pre-order it, they said, we'll give you a free Gear VR headset, you know, helmet, visor for it, so you can participate in this kind of 360-degree stuff. I would guess it'll be the same prices as before, roughly between $600 and $700, depending on, you know, how big and features and so forth. I would expect the Edge to be $100 more than the standard S6. By the way, the Edge has a much bigger battery. At this point, I think Samsung, they said, we're listening. And what is it that everybody's saying? It's what have I been saying? I need more battery. give me more battery. I want this to last all day and until I go to bed. And there are a few Android phones that will do that. In fact, there's only really one phone I use today that does, and that's the big iPhone, the iPhone 6S Plus. They also apparently listened when people said, we want it to be waterproof. I'm curious about that. Do you... What's going on here with that? I don't know if that's really a key factor for me, but people really were complaining. Do you drop the phone a lot in the toilet or something? I mean, what's going on? It's raining? You're using it in the rain. Okay. Yeah, I live in drought-stricken California. I don't know much about that. And they also added an SD card support. Now, that was a big deal when they took it out last year. People really complained. I can't add more memory to my phone. Samsung's decided to make these phones with less memory, 32 gigabytes of storage, and allow you to add as much as you want through the SD card slot. I think that's the right thing to do, and I'm glad to hear it. 8888, ask Leo. We can talk about that. Earlier today, like, you know, in the middle of the night in the U.S., LG announced their new G5. This is going to be a nice phone, too. Very nice phone. Both of the phones, the Samsung and the LG, will have very good cameras. The cameras are getting better every year. You can pretty much count on that. The LG is and Samsung both are doing something which I think is great, which is they call it always on. And as you know, when you don't use your phone, it's just sitting on the desk or on the table or it's in your car on the dash. The screen's off. It's saving battery. Both the LG G5, that's their new phone, and the Samsung Galaxy S6, S7, and S7 Edge. We'll always have something on the screen, usually the time, I guess, and maybe if you have notifications, information about that. That'll always be on. I like that idea because I think what it's acknowledging is that a lot of us just, you know, have our phones sitting in front of us at dinner, while we're watching TV, while we're at work. It's just sitting on the desk there, and having a little information on that screen is probably useful. Both companies claim it won't affect battery life significantly. We'll have to see, of course. The LG G5 does something that the Samsung does not do. It has a removable battery. And even more than that, it's really an expansion slot. So you push a button on it. And again, I'm just working off of pictures I've seen. I haven't held it in my hands. But you push a button on the G5, the bottom slides out. You could put a new battery in there, but you can also put expansion devices in there. And they showed one that adds a massive battery, it gives it a big bulge, and for a camera button and some stuff like that. So I think that's great. Choice, look, this is what we want, is choice. We don't want any one company or any one design to dominate. We want to see some choices that'll help us make a better choice for ourselves. There is no more personal computer than your smartphone. That's the one you have with you all the time. And that's what we're really seeing is these phones are becoming much more computer-like, aren't they? They're not a phone. It's almost not even right to call them a phone. That's the least of it, is making phone calls. It is a communications device. It's an internet device. In many cases, it's the best camera you have, certainly the camera you have with you all the time. Samsung also announced, and I'm very interested in this, a new camera, the 360. They didn't say the price on this, but I would guess it'll be under $500. I'm hoping under $500. And it shoots virtual reality, you know, 360-degree immersive stills or video. And here's the interesting thing. Apparently, it does it live to the phone, which means you could have a friend in another country, and you could say, hey, I'm in Barcelona for Mobile World Congress. You want to walk with me down Las Ramblas and see what's going on in Barcelona tonight? and you could have the camera. You'd hold the camera. They'd be wearing their Gear VR headset with their Samsung Galaxy. This is what Samsung wants, of course. Their Galaxy S7 in the Gear VR headset, and they would be with you. They could look around. They could, I guess, talk to you. Now, that's intriguing, isn't it? That was announced also. Not sure what the price will be, availability either, but I expect in the next few months. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you want to call, let's talk high tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Look who's here. H-Bomb, Heather Hammond. The phone ranger. Good to see you, my dear.
Always good to see you. Heidi-ho.
Heidi-ho. I see you have been working hard, accumulating callers for this radio programmy. I spell it the English way. Programmy. Two M's and an E. What should I start with, though? I mean, that's the question. Who's the best on this of this bunch? Who'd be the best way to start the show?
You gonna make me pick favorites?
No. Just pick one randomly.
Ah, this guy's all right. Brian in Bend, Oregon on line 5.
Flip a coin. All right, line 5 it is. Hey, Brian, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you, Leo. Hey, I was curious, how secure is the new Google Fi Fi phone?
Fi phone.
Fi Fi, I don't know.
Yeah, now that's an interesting question. I was a little shocked because I have a Fi phone. Google's Fi is their own cellular network. They're buying time from Sprint and T-Mobile, but it does an interesting thing. The Fi phones, which you can only get from Google, the Nexus 6P and the 5X, it also works on the last year's Nexus 6, will switch between Wi-Fi, Sprint, and T-Mobile, whichever's better. And I was very surprised the other day when I noticed I had picked up a Wi-Fi signal from a neighboring restaurant. What? And was using that.
So that's what we're finding.
You raise an interesting question. So now is it using Wi-Fi for the data? Is it using an open Wi-Fi access point for the data? And by the way, is it insecure? And, you know, I don't know. That's a very good question.
It's hard to find out.
I would see, there's a couple things going on that I don't fully understand. They're using this restaurant's Wi-Fi, even though if I were to try to log into it, I would get a splash page in most cases, right? So somehow they're bypassing what they call the captive portal. I'm not sure. I would guess that it isn't secure, but I also know that Google's engineers are savvy and know about the risks of using open Wi-Fi. So your guess is as good as mine. Now, I can tell you a way you can control this. And it might be worth installing this. There, you can't just look on your Fi phone and find out who's doing, you know, are you on Sprint, on T-Mobile? You don't know. It just says Fi. Are you on Wi-Fi? It just says Fi. So I use an app, a little app on my phone that actually tells me which carrier I'm on. And more importantly, lets me switch, lets me choose a default. And I think that's probably what you want to do here. So the name of that app, if I can just find it here, of course I can't remember its name. Somebody in the chat room will tell me probably before I find it. But anyway, it's a free app. It's a download, and that would at least until we get some confirmation from Google. Now somebody says that the Google Fi Wi-Fi is routed through a VPN at Google. That actually would make sense. That would make sense, which would mean it's secure as long as you trust Google.
Oh, okay.
And we are trusting Google, aren't we? I mean, you have to if you're going to use Fi. I mean, you have to trust your cell carrier in general. And so if it's not Google, it's Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, or T-Mobile. I don't know if I trust any of them more than I trust Google. Google at least seems to be fairly open about what it's doing. So yeah, so somebody's confirming in the chat room, and I'll have to take their word for it that Google's using a VPN on Fi. That would be the right thing to do. And as I said, Google's engineers are smart enough to know the risks. I would hope. Yeah, it looks like they do. So I'll get some more information on you on that for you, and then I will also find. Okay, here we go. Latif in the chat room has given me a link to Google support on this. So, that's reassuring.
Okay, yeah.
That's reassuring. Thank you for asking that question, and I didn't know the answer, but thankfully, Connect, it says where you go to the support page, the Google support page, it says, connect automatically to open Wi-Fi networks. How does Wi-Fi assistant work? How is my data protected? It automatically connects you to an open Wi-Fi network, but to protect your data, we do it through a secure connection, a VPN. That's perfect. That's what you want. In fact, you're probably more secure using that Wi-Fi than any other. If you see network may be monitored in quick settings on your phone, it likely means a VPN is active. If Wi-Fi Assistant is using a VPN to facilitate a secure connection, the data is used only as outlined above. I'll tell you what. Let's put a link to this support note from Google in our on our website, and you can read for yourself. You can turn this off or on, by the way. So there is that app, which I should find, and I will find, and I will put that in the show notes as well. It's something like, what is the name of it? Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head. And, of course, I don't have my 6P with me, so. But it monitors the Google Fi connection and lets you know, are you on Sprint, are you on T-Mobile, are you on Wi-Fi, and you can change your preference. It's actually a pretty cool service, and I have to say, the price is right. It is the most affordable cell service I have, and I have accounts with all the major carriers. With Fi, you pay $20 flat rate. That's for texts and phone calls. And done. And then the only thing you pay more for is data. And it's $10 a gigabyte, but it's fractional. So if you use 1.5 gigabytes, $15. 5 gigabytes, $50 plus 20. So if you use a lot of data, it'll probably be comparable to a all-you-can-eat plan from Sprint or T-Mobile, let's say. But since I'm using Wi-Fi a lot, my amount of data doesn't go up and down that. I mean, it doesn't go high. Most of the time, it's 1 or less gigabyte a month. So that means I'm paying $30 a month, mostly less. Something between $20 and $30 a month almost every month. That's a great deal. You pay as you go. Bill in Phelan, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill.
Yeah. Hi. How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
All right. This is Bill Blake, your old Planet of the Apes acquaintance calling in.
Ah, great to talk to you. How's things going in the gorilla suit?
Oh, it's okay, but it's a chimp suit. Let's chimp, get that chimps. Straight. I'm very racially biased.
You're a chimp, not a gorilla. Big
right,
difference.
Exactly.
Big difference.
Well, listen, I got a legitimate question for you today. It's something I've been kind of concerned about. I've been looking into the Epson EcoTank printer that you're advertising here, so I don't want to make this like an advertisement call or anything.
Yes, and a disclaimer, they are an advertiser, so.
Right.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you actually have them there and you had an opportunity to test them.
Oh, yeah.
And what is it about them that allows them to sit for so long without drying up? Is it something different with the print head? Is it the formula?
Oh, that I don't know. It probably is the ink formula. And I don't know if they sit there so long without drying up. I have two Epson printers at home. I have a Workforce Pro, and then my wife bought the EcoTank because she got tired of asking me to open the printer door. So she has her own printer. She's been using the EcoTank. It was easy to set up. And we don't use it every day. And it is a problem with some printers, even some early, some Epson printers, that if you don't use them daily, the nozzles get clogged. Haven't had that problem. So it must have to do with the ink formulation. I will ask Epson. But I'll tell you my experience. With fairly light duty, it works fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Signal Spy, that's the answer. You're right. Thank you, Artie. And it's a great little free program. Yes, it's a exactly Echo. It's a pre-order deal. So let me go to T-Mobile's site. I wonder if T-Mobile. I guess I could live with ordering it through T-Mobile. That's what I use. My current S6 Edge is on a T-Mobile, so I would just swap that in. Right? Yeah, it's T-Mobile.
Are they taking pre-orders?
Okay, you gotta love that. Okay, that's a good way to start. Yeah, but they're not taking pre-orders yet. No. Steve Harvey on their front page. I gave up my Verizon account because I just really didn't feel like I need it, especially since Lisa uses Verizon. But yeah, I have two AT&T numbers, two T-Mobile numbers, two Sprint numbers, and a Google Fi number. So, and it's only because I can try all the different phones, right? See, what's this Note 5? This Note 5 is AT&T. See, I don't like buying them. See the Death Star on the back. I don't like buying them carrier locked. This Samsung is a T-Mobile. This S6, but I think it's locked to T-Mobile actually. But I don't mind that so much. I like T-Mobile. It is true that many inkjet printers, if they are not used regularly, will get clogged up, and you'll have to blow out the nozzles, which uses some ink, sometimes a lot of ink. So that can be an issue with some inkjet printers. And I hadn't really thought about it with the Epsons that we use at home, but I don't print more than a couple of pages a week at most. But not at most, at commonly. Occasionally I'll print a long document. I don't like to print if I can help it. And I've not had a clogging issue. So I'm not sure what they're doing with that. Not sure. That's interesting. Maybe they did change the formulation, Bill. Philip is in Mountain View, California. Hey, Philip. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, sir. How's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right.
Good.
I've got a question. I've got a Google Chromebook that I've listened to you sing the praises of, and I love it. It's great for anybody out there wondering. They're very good.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. In fact, I think a lot of times people overbuy. They buy a computer that's too powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was the reason I bought this. I've got two Dells that are served me well. Both are on their last legs. One is already gone. One's on its way out. It's still running Vista from 10 years ago, but it's about done.
Yeah.
And so I got these because I didn't need to replace all that power. I have a printer. It's connected to Wi-Fi. Started to use the Google Print service.
Uh-huh.
Couldn't get the Chromebook to recognize the printer at all, so I had to go and use my Dell or the Windows.
Does the printer support Google Cloud Print?
It says on there, and I was just reading.
It says it does.
On hold. Yeah, it says, I just went to the Google site again just to double check, and it says that, yeah, that it is a Google Cloud Print. It's an HP, and it says if you have HP ePrint access, then you should have Google Cloud Print access. So,
well, I see that complicates it because the printer isn't specifically Cloud Print.
Correct.
Google says, well, it'll work with HP.
Right.
And their service. So that, that complicates it. I'm not sure. I use Cloud Print a lot.
Yeah.
Gosh, I hate to mention Epson again. They're a sponsor. But the Epson I use will use Cloud Print. So I could print from my work. I could print from here to my printer at home. It also means that you could print from a mobile device, which is really, that's the main reason I think you want it. And I can scan to Google Drive, which I really like.
Mm-hmm.
So that connection is nice. I'm not sure why your HP won't do it.
Well, I could register it using my Windows machine. Google Cloud Print would actually let me register.
So when you go to Google Cloud Print on the web, you can see it as a registered printer.
It is now. The problem is, though, I have to keep that Windows machine on, or it says that my printer is offline. What's going to happen? So I can't usually use my Chromebook to print to my printer on the Cloud Print unless my Windows machine is on.
Oh, yeah, that's not ideal, is it?
Yeah.
That's the whole idea, because a Chromebook doesn't – I guess you could hook it physically to a printer.
Is the printer hooked up to
Yeah.
Okay. The printer's on Wi-Fi though, right? It's not hooked to the computer.
Correct.
Yeah, So if you shared the printer through a computer, then obviously the computer would have to be on. But if it's a Wi-Fi printer that supports a Wi-Fi printing protocol, it's on the internet.
Okay.
That's the key. It has to be on the internet.
It is. It just won't work. I think, like you were saying, it may just have to go with something different because it's not finding it through there. Just using it totally wirelessly, it doesn't seem to recognize that it's on the network.
Oh, so you can't print wirelessly even if you're in the room?
Only if my Windows machine is on.
Oh, yeah, there's something else going on.
Yeah.
It thinks it's shared with the – yeah. So make sure you're not doing printer sharing anywhere, including the Windows machine.
Okay.
So in the old days, you did have – that's how you would get a printer on the network.
Right.
You would have to have some smart device, a computer, running the printer. but they put more smarts in printers so that printers could run standalone. They could, everything else could be off, but the printer's on the Wi-Fi network because it has a computer in it, basically, right, that's receiving and printing. That has to be working. Okay, that's why Cloud Print's not working.
Okay.
If you can't print via Wi-Fi with your Windows computer off, Cloud Print isn't going to work.
Okay.
So, yeah, you got to figure it out. Now, maybe you turned on printer sharing on your Windows computer.
On the Windows machine.
Yeah,
okay.
Or the printer thinks it's printer sharing. That's not what you want. So turn off. So what I would suggest is turn off your Windows machine and set up Google Cloud Print or whatever HP calls it on the HP printer without that Windows machine running.
Okay, and then just try to set it and use the Chromebook to try to attach it then.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, the printer has, if it helps you conceptually, it is a computer that logs onto your Google account.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works.
All right.
And so, in order for it to print from a remote device, even, from a Chromebook or even when you're at work, it has to be logged into your Google account. In effect, it's really not, but it's logged into your Google Cloud Print account.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's what's going on. I think the printer is confused. And again, part of this confusion may be because it's not using Cloud Print directly. It's doing it through HP.
Oh, I see. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll give it a shot.
Yeah. If you can't, you got to get it printing from Wi-Fi without that Windows machine first. That's the simplest first thing to get going. Once that gets going, I suspect Cloud Print will work just fine. It's a nice feature. I love this idea. And most new printers, I think, support Cloud Print. In fact, if you buy a new printer, I would probably look for that capability, because the ability to, you know, be at an airport with your Chromebook or your phone even, and say, can I print that document and have it waiting for you when you get home is awesome. It's fantastic. Mark Tustin, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, I have a question about Outlook, but if you want a quick answer about the HP, I had a long talk with HP support.
You've been through this.
I've been a lot of stuff about. First of all, those HPs love to be on channel 11. If you're on UVerse, you don't want to be on 11 because UVerse uses 11 for other stuff. Get an Epson.
We're talking about the Wi-Fi connectivity.
Right.
And most Wi-Fi devices are automatic. They'll look for an uncongested channel and they'll use that.
Right, but I think UVerse uses it for like video. They wouldn't know why, but UVerse says they use channel 11.
So don't use it with anything else.
Right, and so, but HP told me that their units work best on channel 11. And if you have the network wire plugged in, that Wi-Fi Cloud Print doesn't work, unlike
Lord.
Epson.
Oh,
so
dear.
You're not just being a shill for Epson. They're just better.
It is a challenge because I have to disclaim that they are a sponsor. They pay us money for Epson ads. This is not an Epson ad. This is an unsolicited testimonial from a true user.
Right. No, this is just a guy.
It is better. I agree.
Yeah, I don't smoke, but I'm that fat tech that's badly dressed.
You're the guy, huh?
Yeah, I charge more if I got to put on pants.
I apologize.
Yeah, I love my shorts. But the thing is that, no, it's okay.
And good on you for not smoking.
Oh, God, no. And I also had a question about Drobo, but that's basically it. Is Epson's just going to be a lot easier to deal with? They'll even, through Macs, you can do Cloud Print, because Macs and HPs on networks are also horrible.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I'm not. I lost faith with the HP a while ago.
Yeah. When they need to find the printer, takes forever, whether it's Mac or. And again, get an Epson. Anyhow, I think we've beaten that one to death. Also, can I just say Dell is awesome?
I agree with you on that, too. They're not a sponsor.
No, I've got a better one for you. I lost a backup of a customer. I don't know how I did it. I don't know where it went. But Dell, actually, the customer called a week later and said, can you send me back my hard drive with all of my daughter's pictures?
And they did?
Did.
Amazing. Hey, hang on. We'll get your question in a second. We got to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88-88 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. You'd like to know more about high tech. That's what we do here. It's high tech time. Mark in Tustin is on the line. Thanks for hanging on, Mark.
Yeah, so I had a question about Outlook and if you recommend Drobo. The Outlook 2013 and 16, in the comments for your contacts, there's no longer bolds, underlines, any of that. And so for people like me with reading disabilities, being able to bold certain things,
Yeah.
Is there any add-ins, any way to fix this?
That's interesting. I didn't know they'd stripped formatting out. It probably has to do with compatibility with other services. You didn't turn off HTML emails or something like that, did you? Is this something that you know they took out?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, I've read some up on some forums, and I was thinking, you know, that either you and or the chat room might have something, and I've been thinking about it for a week or two, and I all of a sudden thought, I need to call Leo. Ran in from doing the lawn, picked up the phone, dialed the first time, and got in.
You are a lucky fella.
Yeah.
It looks like a way to activate it again. You need to do what you want is rich formatted text in the notes, right?
In the contact sections. Notes.
Yeah. It looks like I found an article here from MS Outlookware, which is a blog about Outlook.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that. And it says enable formatting and attachments in notes in Outlook 2013. So it. You have to, problem generally occurs when the user utilizes Hotmail or Outlook.com account connected by Exchange ActiveSync protocol to MS Outlook version 2013. To resolve the trouble, it becomes necessary to enable formatting and attachments. Anyway, I don't know exactly.
You put a link in.
We'll put it in the show notes. Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. Yeah. So there's some workarounds, I guess.
Okay.
And they might be worth looking at. And then maybe somebody in the chat room knows of an add-on that you could add that to. Are you talking about notes just like in appointments, or are you using it for a more elaborate note-taking?
No. Just like if I have a note on Leo, and I know, or better yet, Steve Gibson. And if I'm going to go over to Steve Gibson's, I need to bring that red Merlot.
Yeah, you do, and, by the way, although he prefers burgundy.
I'm sorry, it was burgundy.
You see? If you had that bolded, you'd know.
Yeah, exactly. You get that? So if you had a contact called Steve Gibson.
I got it. It's notes in contacts in particular that you want.
Right, because that way, you know, you can stick a bunch of stuff, but things like an address, the phone numbers, passcode, you know, if you have key codes to people's gated communities, you bold all that stuff.
There is one way you could do it. I don't know if you use OneNote, but you can use OneNote linked notes in Outlook 2013. There's an add-in to do that. And that, of course, would give you all the features of OneNote, which is very feature-rich, in your Outlook notes.
Okay.
That might be the best way to do it. It is, as I suspected, it has to do with synchronization and capabilities that are missing from EAS, I guess. They'll synchronize the text, but they won't synchronize the formatting, so you're going to lose the formatting anyway, so they just turn it off. But I think this is probably the best. I don't know if you use a OneNote. I love OneNote. It's an amazing tool.
Office 365, you get it all.
You get it all. And yeah. So there is an add-on that will let you use all the features of OneNote in Outlook Notes, which I think would give you a very, very good solution. Anyway, we'll put a link to this in the show notes. And you
all right, and
it.
Last question.
Yeah.
Because I know that Robert Father Ballester says, ooh, we like Drobo. Ooh, we like Synology. I just want something that I want to now have these backups of this stuff. I've never lost one in 13 years. But
so here's the distinction I make. By the way, Drobo does make effectively network-attached storage devices. In the past, it was an add-on, and it didn't work very well. I haven't tried their newer stuff, which I think is less of an afterthought. So they may be good. I just haven't tried them. I do love Drobo as a USB or Thunderbolt drive with massive amounts of redundant storage. So if that's how you're connecting it, if it's not a network-attached drive, but it's connected directly to a computer, a Drobo is probably a better solution. If you want to connect it over Ethernet or Wi-Fi, if you want it to be a network-attached solution, big hard drive, but it's on the whole network, then I think Synology is probably the better way to go.
Okay.
Simple enough.
All right. Thank you very much.
And again, it could be that Drobo has solved this. I really should probably try one of their network-shared devices. But Drobo was originally created as a honking great USB storage device. Just giant, because it has multiple drives in it. And the drives are very cleverly arranged so that the amount of storage is adding up the amount of all the drives minus a little bit for data backup because it's redundant. If a drive dies, you pop it out even while it's running and put in a new one. It is really great. It's a very good solution for massive storage, great for direct backup. But the way I've used it and the way I really recommend using it is via USB or Thunderbolt, direct connected to a machine. They do have network-attached solutions now, and I suspect they're probably very good. But I just remember when they added this Drobo Share originally, it wasn't a very good solution. Roger in the chat room says, we have several Drobos on campus being used as network-attached storage, and they work fine. Really, NAS isn't complicated. It's just that, it really is more about what features and software and functionality than anything else. Putting a hard drive on the network that can copy files from all of the other machines on the network isn't hard to do. It's software features. And that's where I think Synology really has a great advantage. They have such great software. Really nice software. Carl in Burbank, Leo, the tech guy. How you doing, Carl?
Yes, great, Leo. Thank you. I'm sort of a PC guy, but what I have on a Mac formatted drive is some Final Cut Pro video sessions. So I thought I'd be very clever between the incompatibility of the formats and buy Mac Drive 8. I tried it, and it indeed could open up the external drive and see that there were Final Cut Pro sessions, but I couldn't find any of my files, let alone utilize them. So I'm looking for a solution other than...
That's bizarre. You know. So the problem is file format. The Windows uses FAT, or FAT16, or FAT32, or EXT FAT, or NTFS. Those are the file formats. Macintosh likes HFS, the hierarchical file system. Those are two different, they're incompatible file systems. Macs can read Windows files. Windows PCs cannot normally read Mac file systems. So you add software. You bought Mac Drive from Media4. That's a good solution. Although it looks like they may, I don't know. They, it looks like they've discontinued it. Oh, do you have Mac Drive 8 or 9?
I have 8. Believe it or not, I actually had Mac Drive 5, and I didn't learn my lesson. I went to 8, and the problem was still not resolved.
Oh, now they're up to 10. So I'm wondering if the issue is, are you using Windows 10?
I have Windows 7, but...
Hang on. We got to take a break for news. I'll talk to you off the air, because I think we can solve this one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay, so.
Yeah.
You're using 8.
Yeah, it's Mac Drive 8 on a Windows 7, but I've had it for a couple of years, and, the problem happened then when everything was current software, so I kind of just gave up and let it sit. I thought I could pull those files from my Mac formatted drive and just put them over on a, standard drive, but I was hoping, because I'm working with a guy who works in Mac, that we could get along together and we could share that one drive back and forth.
Okay. You're not simultaneously connected, but you want to carry it back and forth.
Yeah, just physically carry it back and forth.
And the drive is HFS formatted?
I don't know.
So one way you could do this that would probably be preferable is just format it on Windows, not with NTFS. Use FAT. EXT FAT or FAT32, because then the Mac could just read and write. Generally speaking, that's the best way to do it, not even to run software on your Windows machine or your Mac machine.
But at this point, I've got the Mac formatted drive. If I format that one, I erase all my data, right?
Right. You'd have to copy the data off, format it, and then...
Okay.
But that's what I would do. Yeah, that's what I would do, because... then nobody has to run any special software. It just works on all the computers. And if you get a different Windows machine, you don't have to download drivers. If you get a different Mac, you don't have to download drivers. It just works.
So Mac can read the PC.
Mac can read the PC. Macs cannot, trying to remember, they can read, but I don't think they can write NTFS. You want to make sure it's a FAT format, extended FAT, EXT FAT, or FAT32. FAT32 is probably the most compatible.
All right.
And then you don't have to worry about it. Let me ask the chat room. Do Macs have a problem with EXT FAT? I don't think they do. And that would be preferable to FAT32, right? It would give you bigger files. So EXT FAT. Disk Utility will do that on the Mac, or you can do it on Windows.
Okay.
But you would have to move the files off and then do it.
Yeah, that's not a problem. I just want a solution for us to share a drive. Yeah.
So the Mac drive gives the Mac capability to... I can't remember what it is.
The PC to use.
The PC can use the Mac, but it looks like... You have to upgrade. I would guess you have to upgrade to the newer version if you're gonna. I don't know. I'm not sure. I used to use MediaForce Mac drive. I used it all the time. Now I use a Windows driver, Paragon, that lets me see HFS files. But either way, it's so much better just to use EXTFAT and not worry about it.
Great. All right, I'll let my video editor know that. He'll know what to do.
He will. And it's so much better just because you don't have to do any special software. It's just, you know, just works.
Right. All right, thank you so much.
All righty.
And I'll keep listening.
My pleasure. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet, home theater. Smartphones, smart watches, lots of smartphone news this week. 8888 Ask Leo. In about half an hour, we're going to talk with our digital photography guru, Chris Marquardt. He'll have some tips for us. We didn't talk this show. I talked last show about the Apple FBI kerfuffle. You've, I'm sure, heard about it. And it's an interesting debate. On the one hand, the FBI says, well, we have this phone from the San Bernardino shooter. It wasn't his personal phone. Those were destroyed before he went on his rampage. He destroyed his phones because, you know, he knew there would be something on there. He did not destroy his work phone. He worked for the San Bernardino County Health Department, and they had given him an iPhone 5C. He'd agreed to monitoring of use of that phone, so presumably he didn't do anything nefarious on it, and he didn't destroy it. The FBI got it when they searched his place after the rampage, and then something weird happened. We're not really sure exactly what happened. The passcode was changed. Now, had they not modified the passcode, it's likely that they could have just gone to his workplace where the Wi-Fi was already attached to the phone, and it would have backed itself up, and they could have accessed the backup, and they would have had everything that was on that phone. They didn't do that. The FBI says the San Bernardino County Health Department changed the passcode. You know how you do that? You go to Apple. You don't have to have the phone to do it. You go to Apple and say, I forgot my iCloud password. What, you know, give me a new one. They did that. The FBI blamed the San, effectively said, well, they did it. The San Bernardino Health County Health Department was pretty quick to tweet, no, we did it because the FBI told us to. Oops. So there's two possibilities at this point. Either the FBI didn't know what it was doing. I don't think that's likely, to be honest. Or, and this is a conspiracy theory, the FBI said, you know, we've been looking, and we know they've been looking. They even said they were going to look for a opportunity to get a court decision requiring Apple to decrypt phones or to unlock phones for them. See, Apple did something that the FBI didn't like, and Director James Comey of the FBI has been outspoken in his disapproval of this. For a long time, law enforcement could go to Apple and say, we have an iPhone. It's locked. Could you give us the contents? And with an appropriate subpoena, Apple would comply. But they didn't like this. They did it for roughly, they say, 70 phones. It was time-consuming, but they also didn't like the notion that it isn't just the U.S. government that, let's say, a repressive regime like China or Russia could go to them and ask, you know, hey, we got this phone from this dissident. We don't like this guy. And we think we could just nail him. Could you give us his information? And Apple would have to comply because they do business in those countries or withdraw from the country. They didn't want to be in that position. Yahoo was in that position and got a lot of heat for turning over information about a Chinese dissident and getting the dissident arrested. So, yeah, you know, Apple's going, we don't want to go there. Plus, it's a pain. So with iOS 8... Apple said, from now on, we're going to turn on encryption on all of the phones we ship, It's going to be on automatically. And in fact, we won't be able to crack it. So we can say to law enforcement, hey, you know, you can ask, but we don't have the ability. We can't do it. Good plan, Apple. This did not sit well with Director Comey or the FBI or law or many law enforcement agencies in general. Although I have to point out that there isn't general agreement in the U.S. government about encryption. The NSA, of all people, says it's imperative for national security that we citizens have end-to-end encryption. Otherwise, bad guys and hackers can get into our stuff. Like they got into Sony's stuff. That was a problem, wasn't it? So some parts of the federal government think that it's a good idea for us to have encryption and privacy. Some parts say, well, it might be a good idea for you, but not for that terrorist over there. So the FBI was looking for a way to, you know, a suitable situation where they could go to the court and say, look, court, Apple's got to decrypt this. Now, here's the thing that surprised me. The FBI did go to court. The court agreed. And the court said, look, Apple, we're not going to ask you to do what you've done in the past, which is to take the phone, take all the data off of it and give it to us. All we're asking you to do is modify the phone so that the FBI can use what we call brute force to guess the passcode and unlock it. Apple said, you know, if they hadn't changed the password, they wouldn't have to do this. But really interestingly, the court ruled, yes, we're going to require Apple to do this. Apple, you have 5 days to respond. We're still in that period of waiting for Apple to respond legally. But they did respond publicly. Tim Cook wrote an open letter, put it on the Apple website. You can read it right now, saying, this is a terrible idea. We don't want to do this. Before they did that, they said to the FBI, look, if you're going to ask for this, you should ask for it in a sealed order so nobody will know we can do this. They didn't. They asked publicly. I think the FBI wanted this to be public. But now Apple's in an interesting position because, in effect, they're admitting, yeah, well, in fact, we can make it possible for you to get into this phone. Furthermore, we can make it possible for you to get into any iPhone. Whoops. You mean, wait a minute. You mean if Apple wanted to, they could get into my iPhone? Yes. Okay, that's not what you said, but okay. I guess that iOS 8 encryption thing didn't do exactly what you said it would do. Well, it's not like they can decrypt it, but they can brute force it. They can break into it. So the FBI wants them to make a tool to do that. Now, here's the problem. If Apple makes this tool, sure, the FBI will get it. But the fact that it exists means that it's a risk for everybody that it will leak out, that others will get it. Repressive regimes, hackers. So Apple says, we don't want to do this. Please, Mr. Court, don't order us to do this. Now, Apple will probably appeal. I mean, there'll be a legal process that they'll pursue saying we don't want to do this. And they may, in the end, be required to do it, which is a bad thing. Because it's inevitable that if this happens, it isn't restricted just to duly authorized law enforcement officers of the United States using a federal or local search warrant, a court-ordered. It's very likely it would go beyond that. And Apple will be required by repressive regimes to do the same thing for dissidents and others. And it compromises our security. So it is a very interesting situation, very complicated. You know, on the one hand, you want to help capture terrorists. This one's a little different because there's nobody to capture. There may be further prosecutions. That's possible. Maybe there's evidence they think on that phone. But what's odd is that they could have had access to that phone. They certainly have access to who that phone called, who called that phone. From other sources, they can talk to the people who called that phone about what they talked about. They can get their phones. There's lots of other ways to get information. In fact, many feel that there's nothing on that phone that would be of importance because the phones that were destroyed were the personal phones. These are work phones. There probably isn't anything of importance on those phones. And I think that that's the case. The FBI was looking for a suitable case to establish a precedent. They say, oh, no, this is just one-off. This wouldn't be a precedent. Of course it would be. Because it would prove that Apple had this ability. And incidentally, what Apple is being asked to do is develop essentially a forensic tool that could be reused again and again. It's a very interesting debate, and I'm curious what you think. Let's talk high tech. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 888-ASK-LEO. Let's get back to the phones. By the way, the website, techguylabs.com, I've mentioned that a couple of times. That's where we put links. Everything I talk about is there. The pick of the week, the hardware pick of the week, the tip of the week, all that stuff, including audio and video from the shows after the show's over. Techguylabs.com, and it's free. I will not ask you to sign up or pay or anything. Let's go to La Cañada, California. Charlie's on the line. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. I have a Samsung S5 phone. In the lower left-hand corner of the keyboard, there's a key with a microphone on it, which will activate speech-to-text conversion. And I am amazed at the accuracy of that conversion. How did they accomplish that?
Well, that's a long story, but it is getting very good, this text-to-speech ability. You're probably using the ability that Samsung comes with, the S-Voice ability. There's also a Google Now dictation that's, I think, even better than S-Voice, but both are quite good. Samsung, I believe, licenses its technology from a company called Nuance. You may know Nuance if you've ever used text-to-speech products like Drag and Dictate, which they also own. They are the kings of this. It used to be a challenge, but I think that we've kind of cracked it. And it's Google's done a lot of their own research. They have a very sharp guy running their dictation outfit. Nuance is the king of the hill in the private sector. And also, countries like China are working hard on this. If you think about the Chinese language, which is ideographed-based, it's not letters, it's pictures. It's quite a challenge to type. when you have 100,000 or more different unique characters, you can't put that on a keyboard. So the typewriters in China are complex and limited, whereas dictation can be much more effective. So the Chinese are also working very hard, as are other ideogram-based languages, very hard on this. And big breakthroughs have happened, mostly because of massive amounts of memory and processing power.
Well, is there a gigantic database
exactly
that recognizes what word I have probably spoken through sampling a whole bunch of words like that?
Yeah, kind of. And now it's not on your phone.
Right.
And this is something that can sometimes worries people. In order for speech recognition to work, you have to go to a more powerful computer than on your phone, a computer with bigger, because these are big databases, big hard drives. Furthermore, to do what they're doing, you know, if you use Drag and Dictate, you had to train it to your voice. They're doing speaker independent voice recognition. In other words, it will work with a wide range of voices.
That is amazing.
It is very impressive. So it with S-Voice, it's calling Samsung servers. With Google Voice, it's calling Google's. Apple has similar technology that calls the Apple servers. Amazon, you know, if you've never seen an Amazon Echo, you ought to take a look at that. That's a tube that sits in your house. It does the same thing. But you don't have to press a button. You just talk to it.
Okay.
And it understands and it acts. It's kind of amazing.
If I say the word period, it will place a period
That's right.
in my text.
That's right.
What if I really want the word period to appear?
Okay, there's where computers are very dumb. They're getting better, but what you've just brought up is the issue of context. So you may say, well, period's a good example. Period and me to punctuation mark are me the word period. And while a human can get that from the context, a machine doesn't understand what you're saying. They're getting better at this, though. They're having now modern speech recognition systems look at the words surrounding it and often could do a very good job. I notice when I use proper names, like the name of a restaurant, that initially Google Now will get it wrong. They'll do it phonetically. And then they'll look in their database. They'll realize, oh, you're looking for a restaurant, which is why I often say the word restaurant or the city name. Oh, you're looking for a place of business. Look it up in the database and say, you must mean this, and replace it. Like, you could see it in real time. Type the word wrong and then replace it with the proper word.
Isn't it?
It's very amazing. It's really impressive. And this has come a long way.
The other thing is it's a little bit more of a constrained vocabulary. These systems do better if they kind of know ahead of time what you're talking about. So because the kinds of commands you're giving your phone are not the same, you're not necessarily writing War and Peace, they can do a better job than if you were writing War and Peace. You know where it's very good is medical transcription. There are a lot of cases where physicians or coroners can't use their hands. They need to dictate. And because that's a very specific medical vocabulary, those machines can do a remarkable job. They can be almost 100% accurate. Yeah, we live in wonderful times, Charlie.
Leo, thanks. Fascinating.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Flying cars. No, not yet. But imagine vehicles that drive themselves. What's happening? Really important, though. I think we anthropomorphize these things. And that's why there's a creepy line. We feel like it's a human at some point. That's when you cross the creepy line, right? So it's important to understand what machines are doing. They are not human. They don't think like humans. But in fact, they don't think at all. Probably should emphasize that. No thinking here. What they're doing is fundamentally no different from addition, subtraction, comparing one thing to another, but they do it so fast that it looks like they're understanding your speech. That's why we use terms like Google's reading my email. It's not. Reading implies understanding. It's not. It's a better word, maybe scanning. Just as, your phone isn't really listening to you. It's scanning sounds for stuff it recognizes and then puts the stuff in there. I know it seems like a distinction without a difference, but there's a huge, it really is a huge difference. The computers don't think. They're not human. They're not judging. They're not assessing. They're merely calculating at such a high rate of speed that it looks like they're doing those things. They're just very fast. But a computer, any computer, whether it's a server at Google or Microsoft or Samsung, or a phone in your pocket, or a desktop in front of you, or a giant mainframe computer, they're all just big boxes of rocks. Big boxes of rocks. They're metal and silicon, and they just do it so fast, all that adding and subtracting and comparing. Those are really the fundamental operations of computing are very simple. We don't need multiplication, because that's just repeated addition. We don't need division, that's repeated subtraction. So really, adding and subtracting is the full arithmetic component. Comparison is very important. Is this bigger than that? Is this the same as that? And then moving data is another big thing. All processors do those four functions, and pretty much that's it. Everything is built up from that. Now I'm amazed, right? Your car is driving itself by adding, subtracting, comparing, and moving? What? Of course, there's a great philosophical conversation about how do we think? What are humans doing when you break it down to the atomic level? And why is human thought so different than machine thought? And that's a fascinating subject, but not one I have time for since we have to take a break. Leo Laporte, Chris Marquardt's coming up, the photo guy, right after this. If you are a photographer, you should probably have a website of your own. So important, I think, to have your own place on the internet. A lot of people say, well, I've got a Facebook page or a Twitter page or a Flickr page or whatever, and that's fine. You should do that. You know, be where the people are. But you also need a place that you own. That's your site. And if you're looking for software and hosting to make your new website, look no farther than Squarespace, our sponsor, Squarespace. I love Squarespace. We've been with them for, 6 or 7 years, practically since they started. And they've grown, they've gotten better, and the beauty part of that is, if you were a Squarespace customer, you automatically got all the new features. You always do. You don't have to worry about security updates. They do it. You don't have to worry about adding features. They do it. They've got great support, too, 24/7. So if there's a new feature and you want to know better how to use it, they've got the answers. They've even got webinars and tutorials, all sorts of great stuff. Let me tell you why you want to use Squarespace. First of all, it's the best hosting ever. Never goes down. And partly that's because they also have the best content management software running on top of it, your website software. It's tightly integrated with the server software. It gives you all the benefits of state-of-the-art engineering, plus the best designers in the world. So your site's going to look great. It's going to be mobile responsive. You don't have a separate mobile site. No, that'd be silly. Your site looks great on any size screen automatically. They even have commerce built in. So when you want to create an online storefront, it's easy and it's not a different design. Your shopping cart doesn't look different. It all fits in to your design. I'm telling you, Squarespace is fantastic. If you want to see a Squarespace site, well, of course, there are plenty of examples on the page. Just pick a template, and they'll show you different sites designed with that template. That, by the way, will tell you something, because you look at that, and every site designed with one template looks different, looks unique. And it's easy to do. You don't have to be a designer or a developer. You just click the mouse, drag and drop, and customize it to your heart's content. No cookie-cutter sites here, just state-of-the-art, beautiful sites that reflect your design ethos. So whether you're a restaurant or a photographer, even if you're a plumber, Squarespace is a great place. I blog there because it gives me all the tools I need, and I don't have to spend a lot of time thinking about security updates or patches. Squarespace.com. It's free to try. If you do decide to buy, don't forget to use the offer code TECHGUY, and that way you'll get 10% off and show your support for the Tech Guy Show. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY. Don't forget to check out my site, leoville.com, my personal blog. It's a Squarespace site. Squarespace, you should. Yeah, I really like the live. Wow. So there's some interesting things about it. It doesn't do raw yet. But what I did is I put the LYVE, this is a Seagate, was originally a software product. Now they make a little 2 terabyte drive. You can get it on Amazon for $150. So it's a 2 terabyte little thing that you connect to your network. It could be Wi-Fi or wired. It has a little screen on it, cell phone size screen on it, shows the time, and then a slideshow. And then you put the live software on your computer, on your phone, on your tablet, on all your devices. And it's you sign into your account, and then it syncs up all your data to this 2 terabyte drive. So it's backing up all your photos. You can also see all the photos on any other device through the live software. So suddenly my whole library of 40,000 photos is available. They do a timeline. They don't have albums. They don't have organization. It's really a backup device. But, it's quite good. It works. I got everything on it. Every JPEG, the RAWs aren't being backed up. So it's an interesting form of backup. You don't have to buy their device. If you have any Seagate DAS, they call it, disk-attached storage, you can use that as the storage device. So if you could buy for $110 a 4 terabyte Seagate backup drive, attach it to one of your computers, and that could be your live drive. So Rico Suave, what they're looking for, it's the live LYVE ATORT. I don't know if a pro would find it useful, especially because it doesn't back up raw. But so when Lisa comes home, her camera phone gets backed up to the device. When I come in the house, actually, I don't even have to go in the house. It does it over the internet too. So if I take a picture right now, it'll be backed up to the live. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, I was talking to Rico Suave about what's going on. And we're going to talk a lot about this on Twit. We've got really good people on Twit. Ed Bott, Ben Thompson, Christina Warren. It's going to be a very good episode, and probably half of it will be dedicated to this FBI thing, this Apple thing. I don't think they know the old password. So that's a good question. I don't know. I think you'd have to re-authenticate, but they'd have to know the old password. Some people have really, I have to listen to No Agenda, see what the conspiracy theorists think about it. I don't know what to think about it. Christoph.
Hello.
Hello, my friend. I'm great. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Wonderful.
It's a Sunday. How can I not be wonderful?
What do you want to talk about today?
Well, we'll continue the portrait photography thing from last time. Part two coming up, how to light portraits.
Nice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time for a little Kodachrome moment with Christoph. Christopher Marquardt. I don't know why I call you Christoph. Is that your real name?
That's my real name, Christoph.
Oh, yep. That must be why I call you Christoph. I just made that up.
I made it Chris because it's easier. Yeah. It's in an international context, it's easier.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, Christoph, because you're German, and so it's the German Christopher. Christoph. So Chris, Chris Marquardt is here, the photo guy from discoverthetopfloor.com, joins us most weeks to talk about digital photography. You started a series last week, I'd love to continue, on photographing people.
Yes. So last week we talked about how to make people look good, about timing in photos, about focal lengths and colors and compositions and things. Today I want to briefly go into how to light people well, how to light portraits well. Because, I mean, you know, it's not enough to just point a light at someone. You know, like a flashlight and point it straight into their face. It's often not a good idea. And you see that in cameras often that the flash, like in a smaller DSLR, you have this little flash built in and it flips open and it fires pretty much straight from where you're shooting into someone's face. And it just doesn't make a nice light. So first of all, the direction is obviously a good thing to kind of vary, to play with. Maybe actually a good exercise here is take a desk lamp or something. Ask a loved one to stand in to model for a while and walk around them and see what the light does when you move it around, how that kind of changes how they look. You would see this, by the way, in the studio. Actually, in your studio, Leo, you don't have any lights shining straight in your face.
No.
To make what you do, to make it look natural, to mimic the natural light, you have light sources above and behind you and above, on the sides and everywhere. But there is not a single light source coming straight at
no.
you.
No. And of course, studio lighting is not necessarily what you want for portraits.
Not necessarily.
Because a TV show, you want everything lit perfectly. You don't want to see shadows. You want it to
and you want these nice reflections on your hair.
Yeah, so there's actually a light called a hair light. Most traditional movie and TV lighting is what they call three-point. You have a key light, your big bright light. You have a fill light to make sure there's no shadows. And you have a hair light to kind of outline you from behind.
Yeah, and it kind of helps to think about this. It helps to learn that light does have some properties. Light has a direction, comes from somewhere. A light source also has a size and... It also has what I think I might call a quality. So the direction is clear. The size is kind of clear. I mean, you could have a point light source like the sun, which is very, I mean, it's big, but it's very small because it's so far away, or a bare light bulb or something. That's a point light source, a very small one. Or you can have a bigger light source. For example, the sun shining at a wall, illuminating an entire wall. That entire wall now is a light source and it throws the light at you. As if it was a big, huge light source. So the size and the direction are important. But one thing I really like when shooting people is a high-quality light source. And you know how light is made up from a visual spectrum, red, green, blue, yellow, and so on. All the colors of the rainbow pretty much are the spectrum of the light. And artificial lights can be a bit lacking in that respect. But there's the best light source is already out there. And actually, I would argue that most people who listen to this right now already own 3, 4, 5 or more of these light sources. They're called windows. I have a whole bunch of windows in your place.
Yeah.
And the natural light, the natural daylight that comes in through a window is really one of the best light sources you can use for a portrait. Because it's very, very... versatile. If you take someone, stand them in front of a window, you can take a photo of them where the light's coming from behind of them, or you turn them and yourself around so you shoot with the light coming at them. You can adjust the angle that they are facing the window at. You can adjust the distance the subject is from the window, and by that kind of adjust the size of that window in relation to them. So this is really a place where I would challenge anyone to go out and do some experiments with that. Ask someone, ask a friend, ask a loved one to just spend an hour with you and be your model and go next to a window and then move them around and change their angle and try photos from different sides and get a good feeling of what the light actually does. And with the daylight, you really have the best quality light source that we have.
This is such a big topic. Because as you said, you know, there's diffuse light, like on a cloudy day where the light is everywhere and diffuse. Oh, a lot of times that looks nice, but
pretty much what that is, a cloudy day. If you have if you have an overcast sky, that pretty much is one big light source. Right. That's the biggest light source that we have is the overcast day. If you look down at your feet on an overcast day, you won't really see a shadow. That means there is a huge, huge light source. The harsher those shadows get, the more defined the edges of the shadows get, the smaller the light source. And you can take portraits with hard light sources, but most of the time they work better with soft light sources. And in daylight, I really love daylight. Even in bright sunshine, I will go out and take someone and move them somewhere under a tree, somewhere where the light is diffused, where the direct sunlight doesn't hit them. And that makes it so much nicer. And you can just vary the direction and things just by turning around yourself or the model. So there are just so many ways to vary this and make it a really, really versatile light source, the daylight, just by moving pretty much.
I mentioned before I have this thing called a Loom Cube, which is a portable battery-powered, very bright LED, and actually has different settings. So you can change it from super bright, you can have it flash. It can be Bluetooth connected, so you can have it flash at the special times. And I carry this around because this is a single point light source that really helps with a camera phone. And I love portraiture where there's a single light source off to the side, you know? And one side is in shadow and one side's bright. There's something about that. A window is perfect for that, right? You pose somebody.
Here's a little trick. You hold your smartphone in one hand, you hold that light source in your other hand, and it is kind of still a bit of a point light source. It's kind of harsh, but take a thin sheet of tissue paper and wrap it around it.
You can soften it. Yeah.
And then you will soften it, and then it'll become a bigger light source, and it'll just be a perfect way to experiment.
It is.
On your table. Just this one little point light source.
I love this thing. I carry this around with me. Because what's really you don't want is an on-camera light source like your flash, because it's the same place the camera's coming from, and that's when you get red eye and this flattening
effect. Unless you have an on-camera flash and you move it, you can rotate the head.
Bounce
so
it off
doesn't,
the ceiling.
Bounce it off a ceiling, off a wall. Just be careful it's not a green wall.
And everybody looks sick. Chris is a great photographer. You can find out more in his podcast, Tips from the Top Floor. He also does wonderful workshops. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com is the website for that. And each month he assigns us a little homework, which is really just an excuse to get out there and take a picture. Each month we are asked to take a picture with any camera you've got, including your smartphone, that illustrates a word or a concept, and then upload it to our Flickr group, the Tech Guy group on Flickr. And he'll pick three in a couple of weeks. We're about halfway through. What is the assignment this month?
The current assignment is water.
Wawa. And we're not going to say what that means. Doesn't have to be a picture of water. Just something that says water in some way. Water job you're doing, Chris. So here's the deal. Again, take that picture. Tag it with the word water, upload it to our Flickr group, and Renee Silverman will welcome you if you're not already a member, and accept your photo into our assignment category, and then Chris will pick a few, and we'll talk about them in a couple of weeks. Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely.
DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. We're going to take more of your calls. DiscoverLeoTheTechGuy.com. No, it's TheTechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. And we will go back to the phones, answer more questions in just a little bit. Also, some good news if you have an iPhone and you had a third party repair it. Apple has a response to the error 53. We'll talk about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Chris.
All right. I will be here. Let me just check my calendar. Yep, I'll be around next Sunday with part three
part
of the people.
Part three next week.
All right.
Thanks.
Talk to you then.
See
ya.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK Leo is the phone number. We had mentioned, I think last week we mentioned, error 53. This was kind of a scary error. Owners of iPhones experienced if they got their iPhone fixed at a third-party repair shop. Well, there are lots of them everywhere. And, you know, iPhone screens break easily. You go in, $99, the guy puts a new screen in. There's a little bit of a problem if you have an iPhone with a fingerprint reader, because the fingerprint reader gives access to what Apple calls a secure enclave, where your secret stuff is stored. And once somebody modifies the screen, even if they don't modify the fingerprint reader, the secure enclave is no longer attached to the fingerprint reader. And more significantly, people experienced when they updated the phone, the phone would crash with an error 53 and not be rebootable. That'd be it. It'd be dead. It'd be a brick. We call them bricked because it's no more useful than a brick. People thought, oh, this is an anti-competitive move by Apple to prevent people from going to third-party repair stores. See, when you go to the Apple store and get that screen repaired, they repair the fingerprint reader to the secure enclave and everything continues on normally. Of course, here's a security issue. If you've had somebody repair your phone, they may have put, you know, bad stuff in there. But that's not why Apple did it. It was a mistake, and Apple has apologized. It was not an anti-competitive move. It was just a mistake. Apple has apologized. They've released an updated version of iOS that fixes all the phones disabled by error 53, and they will prevent future unofficial repairs from bricking phones. So now, the Touch ID won't work, but that's right? It shouldn't, because it's been compromised. It hasn't been, it needs to be repaired with the enclave, which presumably you could get done in an Apple store. But the phone will work. They said the error 53 was something they created for in-house use, and it should never have been seen in the light of day. So there is a page. I'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com. You probably won't see error 53, but if you did, good news. There's a fix. And going forward, it's not going to be a problem. Case closed. And Apple said, we're sorry. That wasn't what we meant. It was kind of my theory was this was a mistake, that they didn't do that on purpose. 8888, you know, these things happen. Software's hard. 8888, ask Leo. Chris is in Renton, Ohio. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Not too bad. Hey, I've been watching you for a long time, ever since ZDTV.
Thank you.
I'm here, actually.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your watching.
Yeah, no worries. Hey, do you do much with Linux or anything?
I do. I use Linux Mint on several computers. In fact, one right here, because I love it.
Yeah, Linux Mint's the best.
And by the way, others are using it, maybe not unknowingly, because if you use a Chromebook, Chrome OS is built on Linux. And if you use an Android phone, Android is built on Linux. So Linux is everywhere.
Yep, I agree. And technically, Mac OS X is built on FreeBSD.
So. It's built on a Unix, not Linux. Yeah. But, what I like, and you know what, that's an important distinction. I like Unix. Unix is the original kind of operating system from Bell Labs, invented in the late 60s. And it was really where a lot of early computing happened. It's a phenomenal operating system. Linux was written in the early 90s by a graduate student in Finland named Linus Torvalds, because he wanted to have his own operating system. He did an interesting thing. He said, I'm going to trademark the name Linux, you know, Linus is Unix, but I'm not going to hold on to the source code. I'm going to let others modify this. This is in early days before the internet was widespread, but it happened right about the same time as the growth of the internet. Suddenly, there was a free operating system everybody could work on, contribute to, and it became an amazing force. It was a bunch of different things happened, but I agree with you. It's wonderful. And so my current favorite is Mint. You could put it on many Windows machines without effort. It works just beautifully.
Yep.
But there are many, 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 many flavors of Linux.
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's Mint, there's Ubuntu, there's a bunch of different things. And even on Mint, there's a bunch of different types of things you can do as well.
That's right.
XFCE, Cinnamon, KDE.
I use Cinnamon. I like Cinnamon. I feel like Cinnamon is a very familiar experience. Anybody who's used Windows will feel very comfortable running. Ubuntu, too. Mint is based on Ubuntu. It's kind of Ubuntu Plus. That's another nice thing that happens. Somebody can put a lot of effort, as Mark Shuttleworth did, with creating Ubuntu. But because it's open source and it's an open source license, anybody could take it, modify it. And that's what the folks at Mint did. And they said, well, this is a great start, but we want to add some features. And they did, and it's marvelous. I really am impressed with what they've done.
I definitely agree. So I'll get on to my question here. Did you hear that Linux Mint's the ISOs yesterday?
Yeah.
There were a few select people
Yeah, let me explain what happened. A bad guy, a hacker. Yeah. Linux Mint, the main website is served on WordPress. And by the way, this is one of the reasons I moved off of WordPress, that there are bugs fairly frequently. Bugs, sometimes it can cause the site to be compromised. You have to work pretty hard to keep up on all the security fixes on WordPress. And you need to if you use WordPress in a self-hosted site, because then there are lots of flaws. People are banging on it pretty hard. So apparently there was a flaw. A bad guy was able to modify the website so that when you downloaded a copy of Linux Mint, you didn't download it from them. You downloaded it from another country, and it was a modified version that had a Trojan horse in it. Now,
Bulgaria, actually.
Yeah, it was out of Bulgaria. They know where it went. Yeah. The good news is not very many people downloaded it, and it's important when you download Linux, and it's a kind of a geeky step, but there's a way to verify that what you got is what they intended that you get. It wasn't modified. And it's kind of a good idea to do that using what they call MD5 hashes. And so that's how it was discovered. Somebody downloaded it, didn't match the hash. They contacted Mint. The good news is the Mint project's very open about this stuff. They immediately blogged. They said, we've fixed it. Then it happened again. They fixed it again. And they've told everybody how it happened, what happened. So if you downloaded a copy of Mint yesterday, an ISO of Mint, make sure you got the right one. Check that MD5 hash or download it now. Re-download it now because it's okay now. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, for sure. I'm on a Google Plus community, and on Google Plus, we're called Tech and Coffee, and we're all really big, like, Linux nerds.
I will join it. Tech and Coffee. I like the name.
Yeah, Tech and Coffee. We're about 40,000 members. Strong, and we have a daily hangout with anywhere from about 5 to 10 people usually in the hangouts. So,
well, I will join it. It's a TECHANDCOFFE.
That's our site. It's techandcoffee.info.
Nice.
Yep.
And how do you find Google Plus these days?
Plus.google.com.
No, but I mean, how do you like it?
how do I like it?
I feel like Google has kind of abandoned it, to be honest with you.
It's good because I have a little extension that allows me to share directly to Twitter, which in turn shares directly to Facebook.
So you just share once and it goes everywhere.
Yeah, I share it to Twitter and then Twitter copies it over to Facebook and it links back to my G+.
So you don't really have to hang out on G+.
Nope. Nope.
Yeah, it's a shame. I really had high hopes for Google+. I was all in on it, but the man who created it left Google. Google kind of lost, as it often happens with Google, kind of lost interest and moved on. And the site has kind of descended almost now into a haven for spammers and just kind of useless comments. But it's good that you've got a community going there, because that's one place you could follow that you would know to be good content.
Yeah. We've been around for about 4 or 5 years. So
nice.
Far.
Yeah. So, we have a community there as well. We have a tech guy community and a Twit community, but I just have to say I don't go visit Google Plus just in general much anymore, because it just has lost its mojo as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
That's the tech. That's the way of the world in tech, right?
Yep. 6 months and it could be gone,
That's why it's amazing that Twitter and Facebook are so strong.
Yeah, that's true.
And even Twitter's under some threat of
fire right now.
Yeah, they're on fire. There you go. Hey, that's good and bad. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Chris. And thanks for the reminder to let people know. I don't know if very many of you use Linux, but you might want to take a look at it. What I did is I took an old Windows machine that I didn't want to upgrade to Windows 10. And you could just download Linux Mint for free. And just Google Linux Mint. You'll find it very quickly. Put it on there. It worked out of the box. Everything worked. The camera, everything worked. The Ethernet cards, the sound cards. And, it kind of gave new life to an old machine. That's one of the neat things about Linux. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Website, techguylabs.com. You know what we'll do? We'll put a couple of links to Linux resources on the website for people who are interested. We're going to take a break now for news at the top of the hour. More to come. Another hour ahead of the Tech Guy Show. You stay right here. Our show today brought to you by my favorite bookstore. Of course, you know me. If I have a favorite bookstore, it's got to be online, right? Ooh, this is even better. This is audiobooks online. I remember when I first discovered audiobooks. I was commuting back and forth to San Francisco. for Tech TV in the late 90s. And I was tearing my hair out because, you know, the traffic, I was doing it in rush hour. Traffic could be so bad. I'd be 4 hours every day, as between 2 to 4 hours every day driving. And there's only so many times you can listen to Hit Me Baby One More Time before you just go, I can't listen to the radio anymore. And even, you know, my own music, after a while, you want to hear something different. You kind of want to get engaged, get your mind engaged. And I discovered somebody said, oh, you know, I'll get audiobooks. And I did. And they were sending me boxes of cassettes. You have a month to listen to 20 cassettes. You know, it was kind of not the – and if the cassette broke, which sometimes they did, you'd have to wait, send it back, and wait and get a replacement. It wasn't ideal. About 2000, a company named Audible came along with an interesting idea, digital downloads of audiobooks. And they, because no one had a way to play these, they actually had a piece of hardware. I think it was called the Otis when they first came out. But over time, MP3 players became popular. I first started listening to Audible on a Diamond Rio 500, little pocket player. I could get maybe one book on it. But it was great. No more broken cassettes. I could listen as long as I want. Fast forward 16 years later, I'm still an avid Audible subscriber, Audible listener. I have more than 300 books in my Audible library. I get more books every month. I love Audible. In fact, if you've listened to any of our shows for any length of time, you kind of probably already heard all of this before. You know I love Audible. But my pitch is to get you loving Audible, too. So if you have a commute, or if you work out in the gym, that's where mostly I listen nowadays. My commute got shorter, but my gym time got longer, so it worked out well. Or just walking the dog, doing the dishes, the housework. Audible's awesome. If you have an Amazon Echo, it'll read to you from your Audible book. Fiction, nonfiction, history, biography, science fiction. It's a massive bookstore, over 180,000 titles. And they're not just, you know, it's not robotic voices. They're like, for instance, this is To Kill a Mockingbird. Harper Lee just passed away, so it'd be appropriate to listen to her classic, To Kill a Mockingbird, and listen to who's reading it. Sissy Spacek.
To remain on Simon's homestead.
Perfect Finch's voice landing, for Scout, right?
And make their living from cotton. The place was self-sufficient.
When you start listening to these audiobooks, they come alive. How about this? Fahrenheit 451. Tim Robbins narrates this one. One of the great science fiction books of all time. You know, the thing I love about Audible, they have this Audible Frontiers program to record audiobooks of sci-fi that were never recorded because they were, you know, at the time in the 60s and the 50s, they were pulp fiction.
A pleasure to burn. It was a special pleasure to see things eaten, to see things blackened and changed.
I got
to
tell you.
With the brass nozzle.
These books are so good. You listen and you don't want them to stop. You'll drive around the block an extra time or you sit in the driveway because you just got to hear the next chapter. Go to audiblepodcast.com/tech guy. You can get your first book free. Ooh, John Malkovich reading Kurt Vonnegut's Breakfast of Champions. I'm doing all the movie stars. A lot of the readers are not well known, but they're great. Great narrators. Let's listen to this here.
This is a tale of a meeting of two lonesome, skinny, fairly old white men on a planet which was dying fast.
Malkovich. Oh, my gosh. That's hysterical. Audiblepodcast.com/tech guy. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go there. You're going to sign up for the gold account. That's a book a month. Subscriptions are really the efficient way to get Audible books. There's always deals, too, so you can add to it. Here's Starlight Detective, How Astronomers, Inventors, and Eccentrics Discovered the Modern Universe. $5, right? It's this Audible sale. So don't, you know, pick a book you really want to hear. And you don't pay anything for the first month. You also get the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal free. That's part of any subscription. If you cancel in the first 30 days, you'll pay nothing. The book is yours to keep. But I don't think you're going to cancel. You know, let me show you my library. The nice thing about Audible, once you, you know, buy a book, it's yours. You're building a library. So, like I said, more than 300 books. I've put a list on my website of all the Audible books I own. And some of the ones I really, really love. There's so many great choices. Find that first book right now. Get it free. Audiblepodcast.com/tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside the country, you can always use Skype out to call us. But we do love hearing from you. Questions, comments, suggestions, whatever. The website where all the links and things I mention, and I always will say, oh, I'm going to put that on the website because it's easier sometimes to just give you a link. But they're long, and I don't want to give them out on the radio. You don't have to remember anything. Write anything down. Just remember one thing. You don't have to remember the phone number or the chat room address or anything. It's all there. TechGuyLabs.com. And you know what? I don't make you sign up. I don't make you give me your information. I don't ask for anything. It's just an open website. You wander in, use what you want, and leave. That's fine. TechGuyLabs.com. Chris in Miami. Hello, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey,
how do you get in so often? Because really, I mean, I don't mind it. I love it, but I feel like you're an old friend. But at the same time,
really,
yes.
Wow,
I know you well now, Chris. But I wonder how you get in, and others say I've been trying for months to get in. Well, do you have some secret that you use?
You know, I go to the crystal ball before I call.
You started. I know what you do. You start at 5 a.m. and you just keep going. No, you know, the trick, and you probably know this, is when, as soon as I hang up on somebody, that's a line open.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Oh.
But you know what it is, though? I really do take my chance. If I get through, and I've had Heather tell me in the past, you know what, Chris, you've called a couple of weekends already. Can you call back in another week or two? And I've had you tell me that, too, and you know what? I'm okay.
Oh, I don't mind hearing from you. I'm just, what I want is for you to give us some tips for others so that they can get in.
I just do like everyone else does. I mean, like last week with, I think it was a week ago with Kim, I said, you know what, I was in the chat room. I can't get in. And she says, okay, Chris, let's see. And then I just wait.
How many times do you have to dial before you get through?
You know, I've been known to dial up to maybe 8-9 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you do, because we only have, I don't want to have more than 6 lines on hold at any given time. That's going to take me an hour to get through them. So 6 lines is kind of the maximum. But, of course, we can, you know, we've got, I don't know, 500,000 to 1 million listeners at any given time. Right. If only 1% are calling, that's thousands of people banging on those 6 lines. The fact that you get through is amazing to me.
Old friends.
You must know. You know, I think it has to do with location, too. I think that sometimes some people are closer to the trunk or whatever it is that I don't know how it works, but there's some magic. I don't understand it.
You know, I don't mind because I do a lot of homework on my own, too. I mean, I was on the phone with Apple last night, too, and that's what got this whole SSD.
That must be fun. So what's your question? What can I do for you?
Well, my question is, last time when I called last week, it was about the SSD drive. Now, when I called Apple last night, I spoke with this gentleman, and we started the conversation. We ended up talking about you, your show, and the whole bit. So, but I said, you know, because that's all I do is talk about Leo Laporte.
Thank you. Thank you for promoting me. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, I don't mind. And I said, no, I said, but would it be possible to buy a Fusion drive? And then I was thinking maybe, he says, well, if you get a half SSD and half Fusion drive, you'd probably be in better shape. But I'm looking online, these buggers are like over $1,000 for these drives.
So that's what a Fusion drive is, by the way. It's Apple's kind of proprietary technology for merging a spinning drive with a solid state drive because you get the benefits of both. The solid-state drives are much faster at reading, even much faster at writing. They have no seek time, but they're more expensive per gigabyte, so they tend to be kind of small. So if you want a 3-terabyte drive, you're going to get a spinning drive. So the Fusion drive is looks like, to your computer, a single drive with some of the speed of a solid-state drive and the capacity of a spinning drive. In my case, I have a 3-terabyte Fusion drive. The problem is it's not as fast as an SSD drive. You're relying on the operating system to figure out which files belong on the fast drive, which on the slow. I personally prefer to do it myself, to have two, if you can, and you can't in an iMac, but if you could, have two drives, have a fast flash drive for your operating system and programs, and keep your data on a spinning drive. That way programs load faster, the system boots faster, you get all the benefit of an SSD, you don't need more than 128 gigs or maybe 256 gigs, and you can still have a massive external drive that stores as much data as you want. So that's how I would do it. I don't think the Fusion Drive is quite as fast.
Okay.
And there's issues. For a long time, you couldn't use Boot Camp on a Fusion Drive because Windows didn't know what the heck was going on. They fixed that.
I saw that show.
Yeah, they fixed that.
I was watching that today.
Yeah. So they fixed that, but that's like an example. They're doing something under the hood that's a little weird. Intel offers their own version of this. Some Windows PCs will do this. When Intel's is a much smaller solid-state drive paired with a spinning drive. In both cases, it's the operating system and the firmware and the hardware doing the magic to mix the two together. I don't know if it's RAID or I don't think it is. I think it's some proprietary technology. It always makes me nervous when you do something like that. And then what happens if a drive fails? What goes where? How does that, what's that? So if you're buying a new computer or building a new computer, get a solid state drive for the operating system so the boot ups are fast, for the applications so they load fast, and then if you have an iMac, get an external drive and put all your data on that. That would be my preference.
Yeah. Well, I have a late 2009 iMac for now, and so that's why I'm wondering, if I'm starting to get all this latest stuff, I don't want to start going in there, start pulling things out, putting things in there, and then all of a sudden it's like I'm going downhill, like you told the caller earlier. Yes, I think it was yesterday.
The upgrade cascade.
Yes, yeah, and I don't want to start doing that, so maybe it would be better if I just went out and bought one with a Fusion Drive and a solid state already.
Well, oh, yeah. I mean, that's normally how you do it. Of course, Apple's Fusion Drives are expensive.
Okay. Yeah. Well, over $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody just put a post. This is a almost four-year-old post in the chat room from Computer World on how you can do it yourself. I don't recommend that.
No,
it's quite the hack.
Yeah.
What I would recommend is what I said. Buy two different drives, one for data and one for programs. And that way you get the best of both worlds. That's how I do it on all my machines.
Which one of those would be external or both internal?
If you have a PC that you could put two drives in, they can both be internal. In the case of an iMac, you buy an iMac with an SSD. You don't have to buy a giant one, so you can save money. And then connect via Thunderbolt or USB 3, which were both very fast, a 3 or 4 terabyte external drive. That's your data.
That's all you need.
Best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds, yeah. That's good.
Boots fast. Okay. Boots faster than a Fusion Drive. And you don't have... And every once in a while, I have little issues with the Fusion Drive. I, in fact, just had to rebuild this... I think it's a 2012 or 2013 iMac. I had to rebuild it because the hard drive was acting flaky. And I don't know, you know... At first, it wouldn't rebuild because it said, Mountain Lion, I won't install that. Sorry, that was the operating system it came with. So I got a copy of El Capitan, and El Capitan handled it. And I think it was a Fusion Drive. Was confusing the installer because it wasn't yet fused. So I don't like it when companies do these kind of hacks. Sometimes they call them kludges. Have you heard that term, kludge? A kludge is an ugly solution to a problem. This is an ugly solution to a problem that I probably don't recommend. Much better to have two different drives. And cheaper, by the way. Especially modern drives. I just bought a 4 terabyte Seagate drive for $110. They're giving them away. Hey, great to talk to you, Chris. 8888 Ask Leo. Coming up in just a bit, Johnny Jenner, our travel guru. He was traveling yesterday when he normally joins us, so he's coming in via the telephone, service in just a few minutes to talk about traveling better with technology. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. Website TechEyeLabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A little canned heat on a Sunday afternoon. Thanks to our musical director, Nathan Staten, for livening up the show a little bit here. Dave in Carson City, Nevada is next. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Leo.
Hey. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I just bought a recent RV. Recreational vehicle, Class A, the big bus.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, semi-retired, looking to do some traveling.
Oh, man, I'm jealous. That sounds like fun.
It should be.
If I could put a radio tower on a boat or an RV, I'd be out of here.
Well, that's part of the reason I'm calling. I'm looking for a Wi-Fi booster and a 4G booster.
Ah, Yeah. So Wi-Fi, where are you going to get the Wi-Fi from? Like campgrounds and things?
The campgrounds, McDonald's, some of the other freebie sites.
Yeah. So an external antenna, and there are many of these. They're often made for truckers. Some have magnets on them, so you can just go clonk on the metal of the roof. So he's not out there all the time, but you get somewhere, because you're not going to use this while you're driving in either case. Well, maybe the 4G you might. But normally Wi-Fi, you can't, obviously you're not driving. So you take this antenna and you put it on the roof, clonk, it's got a magnet, and now you're getting great reception. And truckers use these all the time because the Wi-Fi at truck stops is notoriously weak. As for 4G, I don't know. I mean, certainly there are lots of Wi-Fi antennas. 4G antennas, but I don't think you'd need one. I mean, this is designed to kind of work in your car. Your car phone works in your car, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, some of the places I'm going to be camping, if you will be limited reception.
Okay.
So I need to boost as much as I can.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's see here. I'm looking. The chat room says WEBOST.com. WEBOST. Webost. I don't know. Webost. Webost.com. Let me check and see before you go there. Nope, that's not spelled right, so I don't know. Or Weboost. Oh, that makes more... that makes more sense. Let's make it two O's, shall we, and see if that works a little bit better. I've seen a lot. Yeah, say stop, drop calls, improve call quality. Yeah, so what this is not what you want. Well, maybe it is. It says it works in a car. And you want voice and data. They do seem to offer a variety of products. Yeah, it's basically an external antenna. $200. Oh, yeah, I've seen these around. This one's internal. When you get in the car, it's a stronger signal. It's a repeater, basically. I'm not sure. I think there are probably other places that you can go to look for this kind of gear. I've seen the Wilson repeater. Some people are mentioning that. That's for cell phones as well. I haven't used any of these. So I can't exactly give you a recommendation. We're going to put in the show notes, though, a link to a site you probably need anyway. DoItYourselfRV.com, because they have a fairly good guide there to mobile Wi-Fi and Internet in an RV. Where are you going to go?
All over. Mountains up in Washington State. I live down here in Nevada. So,
I've seen some people actually put, direct TV satellite internet dishes on their camper. And, of course, you have to aim it when you get somewhere. I don't think that's a good idea. Nowadays, I believe nowadays there's enough good LTE all over the country that there are few places you wouldn't be able to get better internet access via LTE. The big issue, of course, is how much your provider is going to charge you, because often they have bandwidth caps. And to get more than 10 gigabytes a month, you're going to spend some money.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, keep listening. I'm sure somebody will call in with a recommendation. I'd love to know somebody who's doing this and has tried various solutions, because I can't tell you, frankly, which are best. I've seen a lot of different ways of doing it. Wi-Fi Ranger, Desert Moon says, wifiranger.com. I know of that, and that's a good site. Some good choices out there. We'll keep looking for you. Elliot in Boston, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Elliot.
Hello.
How are you?
I was wondering about...
Pick up the phone, Elliot, would you? Because it sounds a little echoey on the speakerphone.
Hello.
Sounds like you're across the room. Come to me, Elliot. Come to me, my Beamish boy. Yes.
Can you hear me better?
I hear you better.
All right. So I wanted to switch from...
look at the microphone.
Yes.
Don't look over here. Look at the microphone. Okay, now keep talking.
So I wanted to switch from Google Project 5 or
Yes, I recommend that, and I think your folks would appreciate it too.
Yeah, but the problem is that I have a Galaxy S6.
Won't work.
From Verizon.
Won't work. You have to have a Google phone. You have to have a Nexus 6, 6 Plus, or sorry, 6P, or a 5X. Those are the only three phones that work as of now. And the reason is, I believe, that that switching is not just in software, that there's some hardware that supports the switching from Sprint, T-Mobile, and Wi-Fi. I don't think every phone will do it. So you got to get a new phone. You got to get an invite, because I don't think you could just sign up for Fi.
I got an invite already.
Oh, aren't you lucky?
I got one in 2 days.
Yeah, I think that they've opened it up a little bit. I love Fi. We talked about it earlier. $20 a month for unlimited text and voice. And then you pay as you go for data. And the thing I really like, so first of all, that makes it more affordable. I find I don't pay usually more than $20 to $30 a month. But the thing I really like is it will switch between Wi-Fi, T-Mobile, and Sprint automatically, depending on which signal is stronger. It'll even do it mid-call. So you could be on the phone in the house. It's using Wi-Fi because it's a nice, strong signal. And you go out of the house, well, you're going to lose your Wi-Fi. But lo and behold, there's a T-Mobile tower down the road. The call seamlessly switches to T-Mobile. You keep driving down the road. Suddenly, that T-Mobile tower is receding in the distance. But wait, hey, there's a Sprint tower right there. And it hands it off to the Sprint tower. And all of that, the same call, automatically, seamlessly. You won't even know. That's pretty cool. So the price is right, and I think the technology is very good. Of course, it's Google. They've got good engineers. So I like it. But there's the negative. You got to get it. You got to get an invite, apparently not too hard, and you got to get a Google phone to do it with. Mom and Dad will buy you a phone. That's the way to do it. They might, because they're going to save you a lot of money. I know I keep trying to talk my wife into it, because Michael, our son, is on her Verizon account and uses up all her data after like a week. She's got no data left. We got to get him Google Fi. 8888, ask Leo. They like iPhones. What can I say? I'm stuck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jetter, travel guru, next. The Ring Video Doorbell, our sponsor for this segment of the Tech Guy Show. Actually, the Tech Guy Podcast. They're sponsors of the podcast. I love my Ring Video Doorbell, as you know. In fact, you probably, if you listen to the show, you hear my Ring go off every once in a while. When anybody rings my doorbell at home, it rings my phone here. It's an internet-enabled phone doorbell. And what's even better is it's got a motion detector in it. So I even know when somebody's walking by. Or let's say I've got a package on the porch. When they come up on the porch to steal it, I can tell. And I get high-def video from this wide-angle camera. And I can see and speak to them. And they can hear me. There's a speaker in here and a microphone. I love this. That was really easy to install because it works with wired doorbells or even where there is no doorbell. So in my case, I just unscrewed two screws for my ding-dong doorbell, that little, cheap little doorbell. Looks like it's fallen off. Took that off, the two wires coming out of the door jamb. Connect to the back of the Ring Video Doorbell. And that's it. You mount it with this plate. They've got a great mounting plate. It comes with a level and a drill bit, all the stuff you need. You pair it to your Wi-Fi, and you install the Ring app on your smartphone, your iPhone, or your Android device. And now you're able to talk to people at your door. Say, I'm in the shower. Can you just leave the package? If it's a bad guy, you can say, I'll be right there with my pit bull and revolver. And they go away. It's quite... It's quite effective. In fact, I have many listeners who have sent me emails and tweets saying I used the Ring Video Doorbell. It thwarted a burglary, or we got burglared, but we got video. We gave it to the police. It's amazing. There's so many great stories. It works any time of the day or night. It has infrared LEDs, so you can see even in the dark. You know when your kids come home after hours. You know when somebody's ringing. Yes, sorry. Aren't you glad that your parents didn't have this, Heather Hammon, when you were a teenager? The Ring Video Doorbell, I love it. And because it's battery-powered as well, they have lithium-ion battery inside, you can even use this where there is no doorbell, on your office door or your bedroom door, and add a doorbell to it. Let me show you the Ring app. I've got it on my iPhone, of course, because I don't want to miss a visit. Motion. Here's an accepted ring. Somebody rang the doorbell, and we answered it. Here's motion that we talked to somebody. Let me just see. Somebody last night was at the front door. Let's just see the video from the Ring video doorbell. There's a fee if you want. I think it's like $30 a year. Oh, yeah, there's somebody leaving. See, at night it looks great, too. There's a fee of, I think, $30 a year if you want to record this for a length of period, you know, more than just real time. I can't remember what it is. And I think you get it. You get the first year free. There we go. Bye. See ya. There goes Mike. Bye-bye. I love this. The Ring video doorbell. We got a special deal for you. Free expedited shipping from Federal Express when you go to ring.com/tech guy. You'll be showing them that you hear this ad on the Tech Guy Show, and they'll be saying, thank you, Tech Guy Show. ring.com/tech guy. I use it. I love it. You will too. Wouldn't it be fun if they had another service called Faux. Another service called FUM. That would be fun. Johnny Jet!
How you doing?
What are you, in the witness protection program? What's going on here? Wait a minute. You look like you're... Wait a minute. I see an obelisk. Are you in D.C.? Wait a minute. Are you in the FBI building?
Very close.
Holy cow.
Check out this view.
Are you in custody right now?
That's the White House.
Nice.
There's a national monument.
Yeah, I see that.
And there's the state capitol.
The state capitol?
Can you see it all the way down the street?
You mean the capitol building?
Yeah, sorry, not the state capitol, the capitol building.
Oh, yeah, I see it way down the street with the scaffolding. Yeah.
It still has the scaffolding
nice.
On it.
You're on H Street? What street are you on there? That's nice.
That's a good question. It is 14th. I'm at the JW Marriott.
Nice location.
In Pennsylvania.
That's where all the FBI agents stay.
Well, I usually don't tell you where I'm staying, but because the governor's conference is going on right now, and there's every single governor,
there's
I think, is
here. There's good security in there.
Like, I walked up.
You're safe.
And there had to be 7 Secret Service just on my floor. And I'm like, what's up, boys? They just looked at me. They don't even smile.
We got a perp here going down the aisle.
Yeah. Should I shut the curtains so you can
see? No, it's fine. I don't care. It's radio. Nobody cares.
I don't think they want to see me.
I like the silhouette. And now joining us from the nation's capital.
Yeah. And yesterday I got a preview of Trump's new hotel, which is right there. It's a historic building. It's opening in September.
Oh, on the right there?
Yes, with the tower.
Oh, with the tower.
It's the old post office building. And he spent $200 million of his own money, and I'm buddies with the GM.
If he gets elected president, you know, he's going to have to put all that stuff in a trust.
For sure. But... My
he
God!
Can't,
and
he can't
a huge
possibly
sign right out front
saying Trump for president.
No, it just says Trump opening in.
Doesn't
September
have to say much. Just says to Trump. We'll be here for the inauguration.
Well, that's where they would be, but they can't have it open. He can't put a sign there once the building's up. It's just a paper sign, or
the
whatever
old
it was made.
Post office. The old post office.
But I'm sick, by the way.
Oh, you got a cold?
I took your advice and said I won't be such a germaphobe. Let my guard down. flew to Florida, flew back to California, flew to D.C., didn't wipe down my seats, just gave my presentation, have 101 fever.
Maybe I should have been clear. The reason that works is because you get sick. You develop immunities, then the next time you won't get sick. So what you're doing is this is all part of the process. You're getting sick so that you won't get sick again.
Yeah.
No, be a germaphobe. Go ahead.
My dad's just like you. He's like, are you crazy? You're like Howard Hughes. And now I'm sick.
Now you're sick.
And my wife's not feeling too fresh either, and she's lying in bed.
Oh, dear. You're both sick. Yeah. You know, when you kiss, you exchange 80 million bacteria.
Yeah, well, our kissing days are over then.
That's it. No more. I'm a germaphobe. Is it an actual phobia or?
No, it's not that bad.
No. Just have to wipe everything down before you touch it.
Because I travel so much, I see what people do.
Yeah, no, I think it's that's
disgusting.
Different. That's different. We often do get sick as we travel, right? That's very common.
Yeah.
No, sorry. And that song means one thing. Johnny Jett is here, our traveling man. He's a world traveler, travels hundreds of thousands of miles a year, and then distills everything he learns into his website, johnnyjett.com, and his newsletter at johnnyjett.com, many newsletters, into his Twitter feed at Johnny Jett, and his Instagram posts are fine, too, at Johnny Jett. And by the way, here he is to help us travel better with technology. And where are you, Johnny Jett?
I'm in the nation's capital.
D.C.
D.C., I was just speaking at the Travel Adventure Show, and I'll be speaking at the Bay Area one in 2 weeks. So if you're around the area, Santa Clara Convention Center, I'll be there on, I think it's Saturday, March 5th.
What do you talk about at these talks?
How to travel like a rock star, how to get upgraded, how to get the best deals, travel tips like using wipes, Clorox wipes, so you don't get sick.
Which you wish you had done, I know. So I'm to blame for Johnny's cold because you can hear it. I said, don't be such a germaphobe last week. Yep. So what did you do? You didn't wipe down everything when you got on the plane.
I didn't. I flew to Florida with my dad. Didn't wipe down the hotel. Then flew back to California, dropped my dad off, flew to D.C., and now I'm sick.
Don't you know that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, Johnny Jett?
Well, let's hope it doesn't kill me.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Because I'm sick, I actually have a good app, and this is actually thanks to Dr. Mom in the chat room. Last week, I was reading the chat room, and she said, check out Stay Connect. So have you heard of Stay Connect?
No. What is that?
So it's an app for iOS and Android. It's free, mm-hmm. and you can control the TV in 600,000 hotel rooms across the U.S.
Without touching the remote.
Well, you do have to touch it to hit the menu on the TV, and then it says press 1 to pair up your phone. Then it gives you a code. You punch in the code, and now my phone is connected to the TV, and I've been freaking my wife out because she has no idea I've been doing this.
Oh, that's neat.
Channel. So,
is this called Stay Connect or Connected?
I have it written down. I think it's just Stay Connect.
Stay Connect. I'm trying to find it. That's all.
All right. Okay, let me look in my notes.
Stay Connect. Or look
I think
in the
it's
app.
Just Stay Connect.
All right. Oh, yeah, I see. Stay Connect Mobile.
Yeah, Stay Connect.
And they have it for Android as well. That's cool.
Yes, they do. And it's free. But it's not every hotel. Like, I just came from the Marriott Marquis, which is where I stayed for the speech, and it wouldn't work there. But now I'm at the JW Marriott, and it works. And I stayed at the Wyndham in Florida, and that worked.
Any idea why it doesn't work in some places?
I don't know. When I hit menu, it wasn't an option to connect, to pair up. Huh. It might have been an older TV. I'm not sure. But what's cool is that you can control the TV from, you know, I was 100 yards down the hallway, turning it on and off, changing the channel. And what I love about it is you can, instead of trying to find out what you're looking for, like you always have to go through and trying to find the game. And you're like, what channel is it?
Right.
And you can never find the guide. It's right there on the phone.
Now, that's 99 cents a year for the program.
No, this is actually, it's free, actually, for the that's for the free one. I think for 99 cents, you get to see access to the movies in the room, but you still have to pay for it.
Ah, nice. All right.
Yeah, and I love it. So thank you, Dr. Mom.
I am going to install that on all my phones right now. That's a very handy tool. That's great.
But you can only have
Connect
one,
Mobile.
You can only have one phone connected at a time, so it will disconnect. So obviously, if the person checks out, then you'll just...
As you it know, should just, be. You don't want to change their channel when
exactly.
you're home. Although that would be kind of funny. Why does this channel keep changing? What's going on?
Yes. So, and I got a website for you.
Yes, sir.
This one's called PassportIndex.com.
PassportIndex.com.
So this is more about information. So it tells you, you know, every passport in the world, and tells you which ones are the most powerful. And it's ranked on the 193 United Nations member countries. So that's how many there are. Plus, there's six territories like Macau and Kosovo. So it's for a total of 199. So take a guess which one is the most powerful passport in the world.
Powerful how? Like you could charge a battery?
To enter, you can get
into the most countries with.
Exactly, without getting a visa.
Without sending a way to get a visa.
Canada. No, it's actually the U.S. and the United Kingdom tied with 147.
Interesting.
Number two is France, Germany, and South Korea at 145. But anyway, if you're kind of a nerd like me, it gives you all kinds of cool information, data, and shows you, you know, whenever I'm standing in these passport lines, I'm always checking out people's passport covers, what the colors
are. Yeah, the covers are kind of cool. Look, this the if you go to passportindex.com, the first thing you see is all the passport covers. Very nice.
Yeah. And speaking of passports, by the way, I am, you know, I was speaking today at the show and the State Department's there, and they wanted me to remind people that in 2007 is when Canada and the cruise ships started requiring people to get a passport.
Yeah.
So there was a huge influx of people to apply for a passport. So coming up in 2017, they're going to be inundated. So if your passport's going to expire in 2017, my advice from them is to, you know, send it away early. Otherwise, it's going to take a lot longer than usual.
Furthermore, now that there are new requirements for ID, state ID, there are going to be a lot of people who find in the next year that they can no longer use their driver's license to get on a plane. Those people are also going to be applying for passports.
Yeah, I think they actually extended it by a year or two.
Oh, so that'll be next year.
But there are a bunch of states. I know Minnesota is one of them. I think New York might even be one of them.
I think California is one of them.
No, I don't think California is, because I would have been more worried.
Okay.
But you're going through Florida the other day. The TSA guy stopped my dad because his license expired. I'm like, look, the guy is 87. What do you want him to do? And I usually have his passport, but we did it this trip.
Expired? And, it proves it's him, right?
Yeah, so, you know, they pulled us to the side and they, you know, asked for some kind of ID. We showed him his bank card. You just got to be polite and say, listen, I'm not moving, buddy. So you go get your supervisor.
Wow.
Otherwise, we're going to have problems.
Wow. If you want to know more about this new requirement, the Department of Homeland Security, DHS.gov, has a page. It's called Real ID. It was actually enacted by Congress in 2005 after 9/11. And the states are required to create enhanced driver's licenses, and many have not, and which means at some point they're going to not be usable to get on an airplane.
Right. And what some people don't realize is that their passports, you know, they think that they have plenty of time. There's 6 months left or 5 months. Mm-hmm. You know, most countries require that your passport's valid for at least 6 months. So if it's not, you better go bring it in early. Otherwise, you're going to get denied at the airport and you're going to lose out on your tickets. And when you apply for your passport, make sure you checkmark the new edition. You can get 52 page instead of 26, and it's free of charge. They're no longer going to let you add passport pages.
Yikes. So I found the dates. Starting January 22nd, 2018, so almost 2 years from now, if your state was not granted an extension, you'll have to show an alternative form of identification, such as a passport. And then starting October 1st, 2020.
And which states are they?
The only compliant states so far are Michigan, Minnesota, New York, Vermont, and Washington are the only states that currently issue EDLs.
Really? California's not in there.
So
I better get cracking.
I think they better get going. And then by 2020, every air traveler will need a Real ID compliant license or another acceptable form of identification. In other words, a passport or some other form of legal ID. Credit card doesn't work, I found out.
Well, you can still get through security even if you forget your license or it gets stolen or your passport. You just got to go speak to them and show some kind of ID. I've heard about people just bringing up their Facebook page and that's good enough.
What?
Yes.
That should not be good enough.
That should not be good enough, but I've heard about it.
What? JohnnyJet.com, the place to go. If you want to see him speak, I'm sure you post that on the website as well, and you should go see him speak, but only after he gets over the Spanish flu or whatever is bringing it low. Hope you feel better. Take care, Johnny.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I love this silhouette. And even his voice sounded like it was modified to protect his identity. Thanks, Johnny. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Feel better. And I apologize. Don't listen to me.
No problem.
Ever again. Do not listen to me. I don't know what I'm talking about. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Last segment of the show. I can't believe it. Man, the time flies. Time doth fly. Michael is in Canyon City, Colorado. Hey, Michael.
Hey.
Hey.
Dr. Leo.
Yes, sir. You have a thought about this Apple FBI kerfuffle.
Well, it seems to me that they pulled a Trump on him.
Trump. Is this a verb now? This is good. I like it. What is a Trump? They've been trumped?
Well, it's to use the media for free for marketing.
You know what? That's exactly what the FBI said. The FBI actually said that. They said, no, this is just a marketing ploy for Apple.
Sure is. Yeah. I mean, why would they slip just enough information to get the FBI red flag up so that they'll drag it through court? The longer this goes, the better Apple is going to get out of it. I think they're brilliant.
It could backfire, because if the court continues to hold that they need to crack the phone, we now know that Apple does, in fact, we know it already. I think it's backfired already. Because we now know that Apple can crack any iPhone.
But if they crack it, well, now you need the Apple super duper security phone.
You think they'll sell another phone? Yeah, but I don't think anybody would be fooled by that, because they said this was the super duper phone.
Well, you got to go with the double super duper. they're gonna sell something after this.
There is an important piece of information here, which is there was just recently a study by Bruce Schneier, who's a great security guy, and he investigated where can you get strong encryption that the FBI can't crack, or your government, depending on what country you're in. Turns out there are programs in 70 different nations that will give you strong encryption, messaging programs like Ricochet, for instance, that are absolutely uncrackable at this point. And so even if the Apple is forced to hand over the keys to the FBI, and I suspect they will be, if a terrorist or a crook who's smart enough to know this wants to communicate without fear of eavesdropping, there are plenty of ways to do it, and there always will be, because making strong encryption is well known, and the math is already out there. Everybody knows it. So there's no way you can – the horse has left the barn in this respect. There's no way you can say, well, we're going to be able to read every email, and we're going to be able to listen to every phone call. They can't. They may be able to listen to every Apple phone call, but they won't be able to listen to every phone call because strong encryption exists.
I think the FBI is going to lose, even if it goes
so?
Its way all the way to the Supreme Court. Hell yeah. Well, I mean, let's say I was in my garage. I'm building bad things, and the FBI wants to go in my garage.
They can go in. All they need is a warrant, right? Exactly. And even if you have a safe in that garage, they have the right to break into that safe, don't they? If they have a warrant.
And if Apple built that safe and it had an impenetrable lock, who's going to get served, Apple or me?
Oh, that's interesting.
They don't own the safe. I do.
Right. You will get
served. They don't own the phone anymore. They sold it. They don't have possession or any right to it. They have to serve. Well, or they can do what they want. But if they want to be effective, you serve the person who owns the phone.
This is an interesting question. I've even heard a conspiracy theory that said Apple wanted this to happen, not only because of the marketing benefit, but because of the death of Antonin Scalia. That this is a very far-fetched conspiracy theory, but I'll give it to you for what it's worth. The person who wrote this, Robert X. Cringely, who's a computer columnist, thinks that with the absence of Scalia, the Supreme Court would rule favorably for Apple. So that because it's a more liberal court without Scalia on it. And I'm not sure this is the case, but this is the theory. And so Apple precipitated this, trying to get a ruling now at a time when the court would be most favorable to it. I don't know if that's true. I think you're casting the dice.
I don't think they have. They'd have to do it awfully quick compared to what usually gets up their timeline.
I know.
I think there'll be a justice on the court from the next president before it gets.
Yeah, don't you think?
Court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I didn't really buy into his premise. But, there's a lot of conspiracies floating around right now.
Well, if you take out the cost of what Apple's going to have to spend for this process because of the whole thing and compare it to what it would cost to have the same impact in a marketing program. I mean, everybody knows.
You're a cynic, my friend.
When I was a kid and you wanted a soda pop, you told people, I'm going to the store to buy a Coke.
They're Tom Sawyering it.
Yeah. When you think of phone, it's going to be Apple. I'm going to buy me an Apple.
Yep.
That's what they're shooting for. They're going from recognition to a permanent place, as all products in this category are referred to by my name. And that's how you get there.
Well, they are a brand name practically, aren't they?
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah. But yeah, I'm going to go buy an Apple. Even if you're buying an Android, you're going to go buy an Apple. Even if you're buying a Pepsi, you're buying a Coke.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I don't. I think the real problem is it's very hard to know exactly what's going on here. And I agree with you that it doesn't take much. You just look at this to realize there's more than meets the eye, whether it's Apple or the FBI playing a game here or both. And I think you're probably right. It's probably both. There is more than meets the eye. I just don't know. I just don't know. There's a lot of food for thought. Got 145 seconds left in the show. Ed, Crossville, Tennessee, welcome.
Good afternoon, Leo, from Crossville, Tennessee.
Good afternoon. What can I do for you?
I have one comment and one question. My comment is that the reason they're going after Apple with this 1780-something ruling.
1793, yes. That's how old the law is they're using as justification.
Exactly. And I think it says something about reasonable in there, but I'm not sure. And I don't consider this in any way to be reasonable.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't give somebody the key, the master key to all the Ford cars because, you know, I needed to get in my car.
No, absolutely not.
So that doesn't make much reasonable sense.
I agree.
And now my question is, I have an email domain or email address at my domain.
Yeah.
I don't have a domain.
No, everybody should. Don't. You don't need a website to have the email go to yourname.com.
Well, yeah, I have one with a company that's not Stop Mama, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the opposite of Stop Mama.
Yes.
Go Daddy. I know that. Yeah. Okay. So GoDaddy will do this. A lot of companies do this. You register a domain name. You don't set up a website, but they do web email. They do email hosting for you.
Yeah, but I want to get away from them.
Yeah, you don't need to use them because all you really need to do is have mail that comes to the registrar, comes to that address, bounce off and go to Gmail, for instance. You could use Gmail.
Okay.
And that's free, and it's unlimited, and it's better. It's got anti-spam. It's just a better way to do mail, if you ask me.
Okay, so I don't need to set it up any different. I can still use GoDaddy, but I don't have to deal with them.
Check and see if they've got something called email forwarding. You don't want them to store.
They do.
Yeah, it's cheaper, too, right? Because they're not storing anything.
Right.
In many cases, it's free because you just change a DNS record to say when mail comes in, go there, go to Gmail. That's what I do. So there. The email's not handled by leoville.com. That's my domain. It's bounced off to Gmail. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts. For this show, we talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.